Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Okay, Mr. Red Giroux, are we ready to go? Yes, my voice is back to, the instrument is back. I'm very happy this winter. I didn't really I was a little nasal, but I never really caught the major cold that usually comes along. I'm going to keep my fingers crossed. It's still March, but I think I might have gotten through. We had pretty nice weather this year for the winter, so if that you could call it here in Chicago. So, all right, Reg, you ready to go? Let's do this thing. Episode 407. Let's do it. Put it in the book. Ready? Get that trigger finger ready. All right, my friend. Star, smile, strong. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, while it's important to listen every week to the podcast, it's almost pretty close. Pretty close. That it's just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anybody who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and that devotion that you show to this podcast will come back to you threefold, always paying forward. Also, if you like what you hear, don't forget, you can go to WGNradio.com. You can hit the podcast section of the website, and then you go to the prompt for this podcast, and then, my gosh, what you will find: full-blooded, American-made, informative entertainment for your pleasure in droves. Just load and scroll, load and scroll, load and scroll. Lots in there. What the heck? This is episode 405. No, it's not. It's 407. 407. Wow. A lot of podcasts. Been doing this since May of 2016. We're coming on almost our, eighth year anniversary. Wow. So, wanted to touch base with you this week. My wife and I went on a very enjoyable, interesting, fascinating trip. You know, if you listen to this podcast with any regularity, you know that my wife and I like to travel quite a bit, and we have been fortunate enough to travel to some of the really cool places around the world, and I in not only the United States but around the world. Last year, we right around this time in late January, early February, we went to Egypt and Israel, and this year. My wife always wanted to see the Northern Lights. Now, for some people, that's easily done. Here in the Midwest, if you go to the upper reaches of the north area here around upper Michigan or upper Wisconsin, around the Canadian border, and northern parts of the country, they do show there as well. But this trip that we took goes to the Arctic Circle, where the Northern Lights are practically a part of the regular scenery, part of the lifestyle. Yet at the same time, these elusive Northern Lights, they don't show up like, you know, if you go to Disneyland, the electric parade has a schedule and you can count on it. And okay, electric parade starts at 8 o'clock. Everybody line up. Unfortunately, the Northern Lights are not as accommodating. And it's really a crapshoot. And I don't know how old this cruise is, how long this cruise has been available, but it was titled The Search for the Northern Lights. And that's what it was. And the cruise company, I'm not here to to give any free publicity. Let me just say it's a major cruise company. They certainly made that clear in every step of the way before you signed up, in all the literature, in online, when you did sign up, when you were thinking of signing up, when we were on the cruise, you know, constant. And I don't blame them, because certainly for those who want to sign up for this, there's a great interest in seeing the Northern Lights. But at the same time, it's not like there's a schedule. There's no guarantees you will ever see them. Yes, the chances of seeing them so far north toward the North Pole, toward the in the Arctic Circle, is where there are many cities in northern Norway, upper Norway, like Alta and Tromsø, which are their nicknames are the City of the Northern Lights. Okay, so this is a spot where they are seen on a regular basis, but there's no guarantees that when you're there on that night and that time that they're going to show up. So I have nothing against the cruise company, you know, giving that caveat. This is in search of them. Hopefully you get lucky and you see them. I mean, if you haven't ever seen pictures of the Northern Lights, you can go online. It's an amazing phenomenon. And the light in the skies usually get lit up with a green and a red, sometimes a blue, and they're dancing and wavering almost like ribbons in the air. It's glorious. From the pictures you've seen, my wife has always wanted to see those, and so I said, "Well, let's do that. Let's make that dream come true, if you will." So that's where we went this time. I will talk about the trip in detail in a future podcast. So don't worry. I just want to give you a little tease there. And I'll go into the whole thing as to how the Northern Lights actually exist and why they exist and what causes them to appear. And I'll let you know the big secret. Did Elton Jim and did Elton Jamie see the Northern Lights? Did they complete a successful search for the Northern Lights? You'll have to wait for a future podcast. That's what we call in the business a tease. But let me suffice to say that we had a really good time. And maybe that's a hint. Maybe it isn't. I don't know. We had a good time. We saw some areas of the world that you would never see, the far reaches, especially to go on a cruise ship in February is a very interesting dynamic. Usually you associate cruises with warm weather climates and people with, pina coladas and shorts and flip-flops and Hawaiian shirts and bathing suits and flowers in their hair and big sunglasses, you know. And here, everybody was bundled up. We were in the Arctic Circle. In fact, we got a certificate that even said so when we crossed into the Arctic Circle. They love to give you, when you go on cruises, you travel to different places that are somewhat exotic, they love to give you certificates. I don't know what I'm going to do with this certificate, but I have one that says that I visited the Arctic Circle. But I'll get into that later, because I have to talk about this subject first on the way to the Arctic Circle. Now, you know, if you listen to this podcast, that I'm going to find something that happened to me. You know, I don't mean to do this. This is not a shtick. There may be some times where it sounds like, boy, this sounds just like Larry David and Curb Your Enthusiasm. No question. I love the show and have been a fan of the show from its first episode when it was just a special initially. I'm a big fan of the Seinfeld show. Larry David co-created that and wrote it for many years. And so when Curb Your Enthusiasm and Larry David's own show on HBO started, I mean, I was there day one, even when it was first a special, before it became a regular series. Over, and there's, 12 seasons, and I've watched every episode every time. And I always say that for good or bad, I identify quite a bit with the Larry David character on Curb Your Enthusiasm. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I do. We have a very similar outlook on life and a very similar view of things and incidences and opinions on things. I don't know, once again, I don't know if there's anything to brag about, but let me just say, when I watch Curb Your Enthusiasm, I always say, but Larry's right! That's what he's exactly correct. So I always seem to find something. I never let these things ruin my time, but I do catalog little things that happen within a day. Sometimes they go, okay, well, this is wrong and it needs to be corrected. And that's, so I have to say this one because this one got to the point where enough is enough kind of thing. So let me just explain the scenario. As I said, we had to fly from Chicago to get to Bergen, Norway, where we got on the cruise ship, and then we would go up north. And we went to a city called Alta, and then a city called Tromsø, which is very far north, very close to the North Pole, in fact. And then we came back down in another Norwegian city called Narvik. Those are the three main cities that we went to, or four main cities. And the Alta and Tromsø were really the areas that were best equipped to see the Northern Lights. They even have, both cities have the moniker of the City of the Northern Lights. One is the City of the Northern Lights with a population of 7,000 or less. And then the other one, Tromsø, is, I think, 25,000 or more. Everybody wants some designation. Suffice it to say, we had to travel far from Chicago. And so on our way, we had a connection, and thankfully all of our flights went very well. Most of them right on time. We landed on time or pretty close to it. The connections were fine. We had no problems at all. And that really makes a trip in many ways, is your transportation to and from your destination. And so everything went well. We flew from Chicago to Frankfurt, Germany, and then from Frankfurt to Bergen, Norway. And the original flight, the first flight from Chicago to Frankfurt, was, I would say, about 8.5 hours or so? About 8.5, 9, maybe 8.5. And then we had a layover for a couple hours, and then we took another, I think, maybe hour and 45-minute flight from Frankfurt to Bergen, Norway. So we get on the plane, and we were in the economy section. You know, it's a big plane. It was on United, and it was a 3-5-3 kind of seat configuration. So I was at the window, my wife was in the middle, and there was someone else on the aisle seat in our row. And, you get on the plane and you're going to be on this plane for 8.5, 9 hours. So settle in. And it was interesting and different because, as I said, you know, we're flying to a cold part of the world. We're going on a cruise, but we're going to a cold part of the world in maybe one of the coldest times of the year for that, in February, mid-February. And so, of course, we had to bundle up. I had to go out and buy a parka for the first time since I was in sixth grade when I had one. I had a red, remember those parkas you could buy at Sears about 40, 50 years ago? I was a little kid. I mean, my God. This is the last time I've worn a parka. I don't really have a parka. I don't like hoods. I wear hoodies, but I never put the hood up, really. I don't like hoods on my coats. I have not had a hood in on my coat. And like I said, it's probably since I was in fifth or sixth grade. So we were bundled up. And so, you know, when you're on the plane, it wasn't all that cold when we left Chicago, but it was going to be cold as we continue to venture up north. So we had to bring our coats with us. Well, you know, I mean, anybody who's flown in the last several years, you know, everybody now brings on a carry-on because they don't want to wait for their luggage to come or get checked or possibly get lost or delayed or something. Everybody likes to have at least one suitcase with them in case something happens, which actually is not a bad idea. I mean, let's be honest. But of course, now that the new phenomenon of everybody doing it, and some of them are oversized and many of them don't fit correctly in the overhead, or, you know, you have to put them sideways instead of wheels in front, and everybody's fighting and jockeying for, luggage space in those little bins there above their seats. And then you had to add now to that, everybody, for the most part, having a giant coat. And some people, you know, and they tell you this. Oh, I give anyone who works on an airplane, you know, any of the stewards, the flight attendants, anybody that works with the public on these airplanes, oh, I give you so much credit. It's especially on an 8-hour flight, 9-hour flight. You've got the patience of an angel. You tell people to do something, you explain it to them several times, and they still don't do it. And so often, you know, if you're not one of the first ones on the plane, and you're then hunting for some space for your luggage, you know, you see the first people come on, you know, they're wide open, right? So they put their bags in and they put their coat in there too. And they tell you, do not put your coat in until the very end. Make sure that let everyone put their bags in. And then if there's room, put your coat in. If it's pliable enough or there's some room in between the bags, but don't just put your coat in there and take up space for a bag. It's rude. It's silly. Yeah, you know what? There's a possibility if it's a heavy flight, if it's a full flight, that you might have to either hold your coat with you or you might have to put it underneath your seat. Yeah, I mean, we're all in this together. I know that we are a me world right now, and many people in our society do not even realize there are other people in the world. You know, I mean, when you see people drive today or do anything else, everybody is very singularly focused. And if they're comfortable and their situation is priority, they don't think about any other people. You walk around and say, well, there's no one else around in the world, is there? You see the way some people act. And there's just an entitlement and an expectation. Like, well, what are you talking about? I mean, I have to put my coat somewhere. You know, we were on United Airlines, and that's not really my regular airline. No, actually, the flight there was Lufthansa, which is affiliated with United. But I usually fly an American, and I do have a status on American because I fly quite a bit. I have flown quite a bit throughout my life. And I do get on the plane a little earlier. And even when I do, and I have access to the luggage bins early, you know, I'll put my bag in there. I'll put it in the correct way on the side, the way that, you know, it best fits so that other people can do it. I don't put my coat there. And if I have one, I don't put it up there unless at the very end when there, if there's room. If not, I will either hold it on my lap or I will put it under my seat. I mean, that it just seems like it's common decency. And there's very little of that in today's world. And so, and there's really, I've talked about this in the past. We're in an odd time right now. Our society doesn't even know what we're doing, where we're going, how we're acting. We don't know. We're breaking down unwritten rules of society and recreating new ones. And everybody's just kind of going along. There's very little order today. I've talked about it. When you get into a big group of people, you see it. There's just everybody's coming at things from a different perspective. There's very little accepted behavior now. Everybody has this feeling like, well, hey, I want to do what I want to do, and that's fine. But when you're in a group of people, you have to consider other people. And I see so little of that, which is really unfortunate. And what I had to laugh, you know, we put our bags in to the, you know, in the bin. And we didn't get on as early as we usually do on American, but we were still on an earlier group. So we were able to get some space to put our bag there. And then, but, you know, some of these planes too, you know, the older planes, many people did not used to bring carry-ons on as much. They used to be just places for your coat and a small little bag, a carry-on bag or a purse or something. And now there's major luggage. I mean, you know, going in there. They're not the big ones, but some people, their carry-ons are right on the edge, and they're stuffed because everybody, as I said, wants to get as much as they can in those bags. And a lot of the older planes, those baggage holders, those baggage bins, just they don't even take a carry-on certain size because they were made for smaller bags. So our bags fit in there, but apparently, you know, with the wheels on, that's a relatively, you know, if it's an older plane, having wheels on bags, people don't even remember. Having wheels on luggage was not commonplace. Now it's a given. But wheels on bags was not commonplace. You used to carry your bags or you'd have a cart. Certainly in the last 25, 30 years, it's become standard. Really, 40 years ago, for instance, that wasn't standard. And maybe even 30 years ago, it wasn't standard. I would say the last 20 it's been. So if a plane is over 20 years old, it was made for what the uses and what was being done at the time. And our carry-ons are not overly big. They're pliable. They're not like, you know, like those silver cases that they're firm that you can't manipulate them. And they weren't even overstuffed. But as I said, with the wheels now added onto the bottom of those, it makes the bag a little bigger. It fit in there, but apparently it wasn't closing. And now pretty much all those bags are, you know, filled. All those bins are filled. And so the woman says, well, whose bags are these? Because it won't close. And I'm like, well, where am I going to put these now? Yeah, well, you have to find a space, she said. I was like, wow, okay. And you're not going to help me either, huh? So I had to go through and move some people's bags and move some people's coats that were taking up a whole space, which was ridiculous. And we finally got our bags in. That's not what even I want to talk about. But that was aggravating. That I was just kind of told, well, you have to move this. And that was it. Okay. And as I said, I was looking now in these other spaces and these bins, and I see coats taking up whole spots where bags could go. Come on, folks. Think of other people. And other, you know, and the thing is that those people that do that, they get away with it because their coat is sitting there. And then a lot of people feel like, well, I don't want to move their coat. So they get away with the rude behavior. Whereas, you know, because you'll want to have a confrontation, right? Especially on a plane. You got to be on this plane for 8 hours with somebody. You really want to have a confrontation at the beginning? What if they're sitting right next to you? So a lot of people will look for another space rather than say, whose coat is this? Because I need to put my bag in, you know. But anyway, so thankfully that was settled without a major, but it was scary for a while. We were able to get our bags close to where we were sitting too. Because has that ever happened to you too, where you get on the plane and there's no room for your overhead bag, and then you have to put it behind you, and then go back up toward your seat, trying to get through the row there, when everybody's still coming on the plane. And then you have to wait because everybody jumps up as soon as the plane lands. Everybody jumps up. I don't know where you're going. It's still row by row. Everybody goes out. People maybe are just antsy. They've been sitting for 8 hours. Fine. But you know what? You've been sitting for 8 hours. You can sit another 5 or 10 minutes because standing up, you're not going anywhere. It's row by row. So if you're behind me, you could stand there all you want. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to get off this plane before you, whether you're standing there or not, because I'm in the row ahead of you, and we're going row by row. It's called order. It's called communal order. But everybody jumps up still. I don't understand it. I never do. I just sit there and wait, and then it's my turn, and I get up, and I grab my bag, and I go. I've been sitting for 8 hours. I can sit another 5 minutes. But that's me. But this is not even what I want to talk about. That's not even what got me upset. Although it sounds like it did, but it didn't. Believe me. Maybe for a couple of seconds. But I didn't make a scene or anything. I don't like to make scenes. You know, I'm very accommodating to a fault to the rude. You know, what's funny about it is I complain about this rudeness, but I don't ever do anything about it. I'm enabling, because I know that I've been in enough situations where you can point it out to somebody and they don't care. They just don't care. I got my situation done and my situation's fine, and you go figure yours out, but don't let your situation infringe on mine. Even though if mine is infringing on everybody's, I, in my mind, that's the way people think, I've done my thing. I'm happy. Do not disturb my happiness. Do not disturb my contentment. Even if it's causing discontent to others, I don't care. And that's the way a lot of people are today, sadly, especially on planes. There's just a weird kind of territorial instinct, a primal instinct that we have when we travel, especially on planes, where we're just very selfish. I don't understand why. And that's what I want to talk about. Now, the overhead bins, that's a whole little world and a whole little territorial world and a whole selfishness world unto its own. And I could probably talk about that for an hour. But that's not what I want to really talk about, even though that it does get frustrating and can be irritating, especially if you need something out of your bag And when you're getting off the plane, you know, if you can't, if you have to put it far behind you because people have taken up all the space by your, and then some people put their bag, you know, they're sitting like way in the back, but they put their bag by your chair. So this way they can walk up and then just walk out. I mean, right? Have you seen that? Oh, it's really, being on a plane is like a sociological study on human behavior. It's very interesting. And I'm kind of a student of that. I'm a part, you know, I'm on the plane and I'm a part of this whole thing, right? I got on and I got to get off and I've got to, you know, sustain myself on this, in this situation for several hours. But I also enjoy just observing what other people are doing and watching how they behave and watching what they do and how they interact and how they think of, they're doing something. It's like, do you realize, you know, you're putting your coat up there or you're taking the water? I mean, just little things. It's just like, there are other people here too. We're all in this together, folks. Which leads me really then to my main topic here. So we're going to be on this plane for 8.5 hours. And we're not in first class. We're not in business class. We don't have one of those nice big chairs or those nice little bed things that they have, you know, especially on international flights. They have these really cool little singular compartments that you sit in that you can actually lay down and you're all by yourself. I've sat in those one time. That was only because I got upgraded. I can only imagine how much that costs. Especially on an international 8-hour flight, it's got to be. And I don't know if I've been tempted, but, you know, to me, I talked to you about cars, too. I'm not really big on, I look at a car, I like to have a nice car that is dependable, but I look at a car as a mode of transportation. Not as a status symbol, not as something. I like to have a comfortable, reliable car. You know, I don't know all the different model numbers and all the different, accoutrements of a car. I don't know the size of the engines. I don't know anything about that. For me, ultimately, at the end of the day, a car is a mode of transportation. And that's the way a plane is. It's a mode of transportation. I need to get from A, you know, destination A to destination B. Now, certainly, as I said, I've been upgraded because I do have a certain, status on an airline. And so sometimes I'll get upgraded. But I've never bought a first class seat. I've been upgraded, thankfully, on some flights, even some international flights sometimes, been very lucky. I've been upgraded, and I have sat in first class. Never sat in one of those. Maybe, oh, no, one time I think we did sit in those things. We got upgraded to the business class. But I've never paid for that. And I'm not bragging that or not. I'm just saying, from my standpoint, if I have that much money to spend, I'd rather spend it in the destination rather than getting to the destination. Could I be more comfortable? Certainly. Am I willing to pay 3 times as much for the comfort? Not really. I'd rather take that extra money and say, I'm going to do, when I get to my destination, if I'm on vacation, I'd rather spend that money doing something, experiencing something, rather than just traveling. But once again, if you have the disposable income that allows you, then by all means, pay for your comfort. I have no problems with that. And maybe some people, you know, and even if you don't, maybe you just say, you know what, I like to be comfortable. I would rather be comfortable on that 8-hour plane ride than go to a nicer restaurant when I'm at the place. That's great. I'm just letting you know what I do. I'd rather spend the money on the experience at the destination than on the transportational mode. I'll deal with it. If, and here's the key, you know, a seat, an economy seat on an 8.5-hour flight is not the best and most comfortable thing. I understand that. But I don't know if I want to spend $5,000 on the comfort. If I had that money to spend, I'd rather spend it in my destination. There might be some people that say, you know what? My comfort, if I'm not comfortable, I can't even take that flight. It's going to ruin my trip. If that's the case, and you have the money to do it, or you just want to say, you know what? I want it. More power to you. I'm just giving you my standpoint. Like I said, I've sat in first class, and it's nice. But you still got to sit on the plane for 8 hours. I don't care how comfortable the chair is. Even when I sat, I slept on one of those things at one time, I think. I didn't sleep well. It's just, it's a weird, being on a plane is just a, it's a weird, it's a weird situation. It's loud. It's not made for comfort. They try to do as much as they can, but, and I've never been on a private plane that I've, you know, been, or I just have my own plane. So I don't know what that world is like. Maybe you can do that on a private plane where you can really stretch out. But you're still it's a comfortable, from what I've seen, you know, unless there's a bedroom on there, that you get the bedroom on the private plane. But if you're on the private plane, yeah, I'm sure it's comfortable. You can walk around. The seats are wider. There's less people. There's a lot of food. I from what I've seen, it looks pretty cool. But unless you have a bed and some noise reduction earphones, you're still on a plane. So like I said, you know, for the most part, when we have flown internationally, we've always been in economy. And so, you know, we make the best of it. And, you know, it's one thing if you have to take an hour and a half, 2 hour flight. Okay, whatever. But, you know, 8.5 hour flight, you know, you get in that seat and it's, you know, it's a little snug. You know, there's, especially with three, you know, at least with my wife and I, you know, we're sitting next to each other. We lift up the armrest between us, give us a little extra space. But, you know, it's the seats are just so wide and the rows are just so wide. And here's the key. There's just so much space between where you're sitting and the seat in front of you. Are you getting a hint of what I'm going to talk about, which really drove me crazy on this 8.5 hour flight from Chicago to Frankfurt? Can you tell by the sound of my voice and the way I described the phenomenon of the space between your seat and the seat in front of you? And how we're all in this plane together, and there needs to be a sense of common decency and realizing that there are people around you, and that your situation and your comfort is not the prime priority, that you need to be a little cognizant and aware of other people around you. It's called common decency. And that's where I'm heading right now. So we're sitting in a row with three people. I'm by the window. My wife's in the middle. She's got someone else sitting next to her on the aisle seat. And you know, now it's an international flight, so, and now these days, every seat has the nice little camera or television screen in the seat in front of you with all the in-flight entertainment. You don't have to watch the movie anymore. For people that are younger, you might not even realize this, but there was a time where there was just, I mean, that goes to show you once again, in terms of, you know, the people that are a little younger that are already used to this stuff, that this is common, they can't understand, because we are in such our society so quickly has shifted from a communal society to an individual society. Not that long ago, when you went on a plane, there was a few screens in the row that would come down, and there was a main screen on one of the walls in the beginning of the section, and there was one or two films that were shown. Today's films are, and that was it. You didn't have your individual choice of thousands of movies or TV shows or music or documentaries or nature shows like they have now. I mean, it's really amazing. It's great. But this is my point. We have shifted. There was a time when they said, today's movie is blank. And that was it. If you like the movie, you can enjoy it. If you wanted to see that movie, fine. But if you already saw it or you had no interest in it, then you better have brought a magazine or a book, because that's all there was. There was no, you had no personal device that you could download all the movies and all the TV shows, all the music videos, whatever it is, on your phone. You didn't have that. The plane came, they had a few screens available, and they had one or two movies, depending on the length of the flight, and that was it. Today's movie is, you did not have any personal entertainment. Now, maybe at that time in first class you did, and that was a perk. But now that's standard, because we have become so individually used to watching whatever we want, wherever we want, however we want, that airplanes, especially for long flights, have had to adapt to this new cultural phenomenon that's taken place in the last 20 years or so, or even less. And once again, the smartphone was available in 2007, so 17 years. It's amazing. Smartphones only been around since 2007. And that's 17 years. And yet, you can't, that's so ingrained in our behavior and so ingrained in our culture that we have all this information and entertainment and activity, whether it's, you know, games or movies or television shows, as I said before, at our disposal to watch whatever we want, whenever we want. It's only been a reality for 17 years, folks. Isn't that crazy? Anyway, we get into our row. When we settle in for a long winter's nap, right? I mean, this is going to be an 8.5 hour flight, and we're in economy. And as I said, we've got our coats, and my coat, because of the storage bin problem. Now there's no way these bins were full. Thankfully, we got our bags in to a spot close to our seat, but there was no room for our coats. So the big parka that I bought with the giant hood, the big furry hood, I had to put that, you know, I had to scrunch that up and stick that under the seat in front of me. And then in my little holder there on the seat in front of you, you got some room for your water. And for, you know, I had the little portfolio folder that I had our information with, our passports and stuff. I'd rather have that with me rather than in a bag, just for the safety part of it. So I have that stuff in front of me, so I have access to it. I see it. I have it. And you've got your seatbelt on, and you're just, you know, going to get ready. And then you've got your little headphones, and you plug those in, and you've got your little screen, and it's like, okay, I've got, you know, 8.5, 9 hours. So that's like, you know, at least 3 or 4 movies, right? I got to find something to kill time. Thankfully, I hadn't seen it yet. Oppenheimer was offered. 3 hours. Nice. Woo-hoo! Boom. That started with Oppenheimer. Right off the bat, let's get that first 3 hours out of the way, you know, get engrossed in a movie. And, you know, suddenly that 8.5 hour flight now is only 5.5, which is still long. But if you get engrossed in the movie, maybe it goes by fast. And then I did an Oppenheimer with a Wonka chaser. Hadn't seen Wonka yet. Big fan of Willy Wonka, the original. So that's about a 2 hour one. Boom. That's 5. So now suddenly, you know, this 8.5 hour flight now is kind of a flight from Chicago to Las Vegas, which can be long, but it's certainly not 8.5 hours. And you put on a couple of other, you know, hour long TV shows, 3 episodes, and you're done. Right? Not bad. Another show I hadn't seen, I've heard about. I don't have Paramount Plus as a streaming service. Heard about this show called Tulsa King with Sylvester Stallone. He plays a mob guy that is exiled to Tulsa. And I've seen some clips of it here and there. And Sylvester Stallone looked pretty good in it. The sad part about Sylvester Stallone is that he's really a good actor. And he's got a very good sense of humor. And that was all on display if you ever watch Rocky. I mean, he was nominated for an Academy Award. It was the strength of that, you know, the original Rocky movie is a pretty standard movie of the underdog, you know, I mean, but it was Sylvester Stallone's characterization of Rocky that was so appealing and so so compelling and funny. This is turtle food. This is turtle food. And, you know, it's got more gnats than flies. You know, Cuff and Link. There's Cuff and my turtles are Cuff and Link. I mean, you know, he was really funny. It was an engaging. He wrote that screenplay. He really understood that character. Sadly, he threw away all his acting chops and went for money, and he went for steroids and became Rambo. And basically his acting became all just, you know, physical and a couple of lines here and there, you know, like, you know, Arnold's I'll be back. I don't even remember. I can't remember one of the Sylvester Stallone Rambo lines that, you know, one of those I'll be back lines, you know, Arnold's, you know, I'll be back line became so iconic. I can't remember any of Sylvester Stallone's. I don't even think I saw. I may have seen the original Rambo, but never saw the other Rambos. I loved Rocky when it first came out, but after the second or third one, they became cartoons, and I stopped seeing the Rocky films too. But my point is, Sylvester Stallone was actually, when you watched his first movie, that first Rocky film. Wasn't his first movie, but, you know, the first one where he really became a star. He was a good actor. And he sadly sacrificed that over the last 40 or 50 years for these big, you know, physical rock'em sock'em action films. And sadly, you know, his true acting talent got lost. But in this show, Tulsa King, he gets to act and create a character. And from the few snippets that I saw, I was really intrigued by it. So that was my flight. My 3 hour Oppenheimer, my 2 hour Wonka, and my 3 episodes of Tulsa King. And that got me from Chicago to Frankfurt. So you say, well, Jim, what are you complaining about? Sounds like you did okay. I mean, there was this minor kerfuffle to some extent with your bag, but you got that settled before you took off. Sounds like, you know, okay, you had to, you know, carry your coat with you, but you put it under your seat. Didn't sound like you couldn't stretch your legs out, and, you know, you were fine. Yes, I mean, you know, you're in an economy seat, but you have your armrest up, and you can at least be a little comfortable, and, you know, you got your entertainment there to get you through it. You got your water in your little, the little compartment there in the front and the seat in front of you. You've got your little screen. You got your headphone. You're also, so what are you complaining about? And you're going to go on this cool trip. So What could you possibly find wrong? The plane took off on time, you said. So where's the problem? The problem was not with anything that I had control over or anything that the airline was providing me. We took off on time. We landed on time. My seat was there. They gave me my little headphones, brought me the food and some snacks. They delivered what they promised. Where my problem happened had nothing to do with me or the plane or the airline. It had to do with people, namely a person. Look, I don't know why at this time we know that planes, they have in an effort to put more seats on planes, there is less room between the seats. We know that. They've said that. If you don't believe that, just look at the way the windows line up to the seats now. Do you notice that there are very few times is the window exactly next to the seat? Many times there's a window that is covered by a chair, or you get half a window. They're jamming more seats in there. The seats don't no longer line up with the windows. They're adding more seats, which means that the seats are smaller and the room between them are smaller to add more rows, to get more people on the planes, right? It's just physics. We all know this. If you don't know it, you should know it. And so if you have any consideration, you should know, even though, here we go, folks, it may have taken a while to get here, but here we are. Even though, yes, your seat on a plane in economy, okay, let's get real specific, does recline back. We should know that there is less room now in between seats. So these seats, even though they recline, you should show some consideration for the person sitting behind you. If you want to recline your seat, I get it, but maybe a tad, but not to the full extent that these seats will go. These seats, when they were made to recline a little farther back because at the time there was more room between the seat in front of you and the seat behind you. But that is not the case anymore. There's very little space between when you sit down and where that seat is in front of you. And so if you lean back and go and let the seat go as far back as it can, you're going to be in somebody's lap, literally. That person behind you will have difficult, first of all, with the screen now on the seat, that screen, when you push your seat back all the way, the screen now is almost right in front of the person's face, which is not comfortable to watch a screen inches from your face. There's no way that you can even get to your little pouch where your water is because the seat is at an angle, so that's taken away from you. The seat's almost touching your knees when it's reclined, when someone reclines all the way back. And it's very, almost impossible or very difficult to even eat, to get your tray out and put your food so it lays flat so you can eat comfortably without your elbows sticking out almost up, trying to cut food and eat food while this person in front of you is literally in your lap. And that is what I had for 8.5 hours. Almost from before takeoff. Well, we took off because you have to, you know, they do find that out. You know, I mean, the flight attendants do say, you know, put your seats up. But as soon as that plane was up in the air for about 10 minutes, this person in front of me not only reclined fully as far as the seat would go back, but they did it in such a quick, fast fashion that, thank God, I wasn't leaning forward for something, because they would have hit me in the head and maybe even knocked me out. They just whooshed. They hit the button and whoosh, came backward without any warning. Because I'm figuring at this point, most people know you can't recline all the way anymore, folks. It's rude. It's inconsiderate. There's not enough space in these seats in economy anymore. They've added rows. Just because the seat can recline that much doesn't mean that you should recline it that much. Think about somebody behind you. But if you live in the world where you don't understand or realize or care that there are any other people around you, that your comfort, your convenience is all that matters, then you make somebody's 8.5 hour flight very uncomfortable and very torturous. So suddenly, here I am. The plane just takes off. I'm just getting ready now to watch my Oppenheimer. And within a whoosh, whew, this person is practically in my lap. And I just turn to my wife and say, look at this. I mean, now the screen, I have to pull the screen out because the screen's facing down. This seat is so far back, and this person is in full recline. There was not even a thing like, let me inch a little, let me see. No. They hit the button and laid totally back as if there was no one else on this plane. Now, I blame this person because it's extremely rude and you know what you're doing, but you don't care, clearly. What I blame are, to some extent now, I do blame the airlines. If you're going to add those more rows and you're going to take away leg room and space between each seat, then you have to get new seats or you have to do something to the existing seats that do not allow them to fully recline like they used to. You need to bring that in halfway or three quarters of the way because it's impossible. I could not eat. When I watched the movie was now 1 foot in, was 6 inches in front of me, which was not, you know, my eyes were killing me. And I have this seat in front of me. Now you say, well, Jim, why don't you recline back? Then you'll have more room. Well, I tried to recline a little, but I'm not going to continue the rudeness. I see what a horrible, uncomfortable situation this person created for me. I'm not going to create that situation for the person behind me. I'm a little more considerate. Maybe I shouldn't be. But I'm saying, no, this person's a jerk. I'm not going to compound the problem by me being a jerk to the person behind me. Because I see what a horrible, uncomfortable situation this is. And so then, after a little while, you know, the flight attendant comes back, and I said, you know, she said, oh, well, that person's sleeping. Then, you know what? Wake them up. I don't care. I wish I could go to sleep. I can't. I'm in a prison here. Oh, well, she's sleeping. Oh, well, yeah, well, good for her. Clearly, she should be sleeping. She's acting like she's on the beach. as if there's no one else around, no one behind her. So finally, when it's mealtime, then the flight attendant says, can you please move up? Oh, so at least I could eat. It's one thing to have the screen in 2 inches in front of my face for 3 hours, but at least, oh, you ask her to move up now because she's up and she's going to eat. Oh, okay. Well, guess what happened after food time? Shoo, boom, right back. Unbelievable. The second time she did it, I couldn't believe that she did it again. And so I actually said out loud, whoa, why don't you sit in my lap? And she may have heard me. And I didn't mean, but you know, how much, this is 8.5 hours. I finally get a little relief and I figure maybe you get it now. The stewardess asked you to move up. Do you get it? You're being a little rude to the person behind you? Obviously not. So then I had to do something and I said, wow, why don't you sit in my lap now? And then she moved up a little. Then the flight attendant came by. Could you move up a little? And then I had a little more space. Not much, but a little more for the last 3 hours of the flight. So, you know, once again, we have to start to make new accommodations for our increasingly rude behavior, our increasingly narcissistic view of the world, our increasingly ignorance of any other people except us. And what has to happen is the airlines have to start to readjust these seats. They have to readjust them so they do not recline as far back as they can. They have to restrict how far back they go. I'm sorry, but that needs to be done. Because you can't have somebody on your lap. And it wasn't like this person was disabled or whatever. This was just pure, I'm going to sleep and I want to be comfortable. And everyone else be damned. Once again, to quote George Costanza, who in many cases, his words were put in his mouth by Larry David. You know, we live in a society. Yeah. So we have allowed human behavior now to get so out of control and so unaware of anyone else. And that's become the norm now. We either have to accept or make allowances for bad behavior, rude behavior, selfish behavior. We do that now. We've seen videos of people on planes go nuts. You see, people, there's a whole different mindset now. People don't want to, you know, their comfort and their situation is all they think about. Whether they're alone or whether they're in a group of people, they just care about themselves. There's no kind of sense of anyone else. So I'm blaming now the airlines. Because you're not going to change human behavior, sadly. We as a society have allowed this, and maybe I have enabled people too, as I said. And once again, I wasn't going to start hitting the chair and start to create some kind of an incident. I certainly could have done that. I could have started kicking the chair with my knee to send the hint, but that's not the kind of person I am. So I take it, and I take it, and I'm uncomfortable, and I'm upset. And I let this person get away with bad behavior. So what I think the solution is don't let the bad behavior, don't make the bad behavior possible. You have to restrict the plane seats have to be restricted now to only go a certain amount back. They cannot recline as far as they used to. If you're going to add more seats and more rows and take away the leg room and the space between the seats, you have to change the amount that the seat can recline. Because I'll tell you, that's a part of the trip, right? I talked earlier about, you know, the convenience and the comfort. You want to pay for extra. If you want to, you have the means to do that, by all means do that. If you'd rather not, okay, you say, Jim, you know what? Then why don't you, if you're so crazy, I can understand the arguments against my views here. Well then, Jim, you know what? You're going to have to pay the extra $2,000 if you don't want that person in your lap, because that's economy. If you want that comfort, if you don't want some person in your lap, then you got to pay the extra $2,000 or whatever it is to get in those other, you know, business class or first class seats. Well, that's based on the current world here, on the current situation. My thing is, all I know is, I went 8.5 hours without fully reclining. I reclined a little, but not enough to make it inconvenient for the person behind me. In fact, I don't even know if I reclined at all, to be honest with you. It's possible to not recline on an airplane seat. Yes, it is. But we have people that don't care about anyone else. And so I'd say, airlines, if you're out there, you better do something about these seats, because our communal behavior has been allowed to disintegrate. Do you ever go to a movie theater anymore? People act like they act like they're in their living rooms. They're all stretched out. They got 5 seats. They recline back. They're getting food delivered. They got their feet up, their shoes off. They're talking. That's why I don't even go to a theater anymore. But at least in a theater, I could get up and move around. In a plane, I'm in this metallic tube. I can't move away from this person. The flight was full. I'm stuck here for 8.5 hours. I can't get up and move from a rude person. So take the opportunity for rudeness out of the equation. I've already allowed you, airlines, to make the plane less comfortable than it used to be by adding more seats. Okay, I'll take that. But then you got to give me something back. Okay, I'm going to take away some of your leg room. I'm going to take away some of the space between you and the seat in front of you. So what I am going to do is make sure that seat in front of you does not recline all the way back, so at least you can have some comfort. As opposed to a ridiculously uncomfortable, and I don't even know how to explain it. I don't know what the word is. Inconvenient, uncomfortable, situation that I was in for pretty much 8.5 hours. Unbelievable. So please, you know, I'm Larry David in that. I don't confront the people. Larry confronts the people. Oh, I don't do that as much. But I've got a problem with it afterwards, which is why I'm talking about it now. So I would just urge anyone listening, think about others when you're in a communal situation. When you're at home, you can do whatever the heck you want. But when you're in a communal situation, when you're driving in a car, you know, with other traffic, when you're in a plane, when you're in a large group and you're next to people, you're in a line, have some consideration. Yes, we all believe our specific personal position and situation is the most important. That's a part of the human condition. I get that. But there are times when you are in public where you have to sacrifice some of that temporarily for the sake of others, so that their privacy can be somewhat maintained within a crowded area. That's not too much to ask. As I said, the history books are not going to be very kind to us, folks. I hope you know that. The historians are going to look back at the first 50 years. I don't know what's going to happen in the next 50 after that, but I could tell you, at least in these next 50, they're going to look at these next 50 years, these first 50 years of the 21st century, and they're going to say, wow, were those people screwed up in so many ways. We are not going to be viewed as a greatest generation. This century so far, the first 23 and a half years here, almost 24 years now, have been pretty bad on almost every front. And a lot of it has to do with our own behavior. I hope we can begin to start to realize that we all have to get along here. There's more of us, and things are getting crowded, and you're not the most important person in the world. There are other people in the world too. It starts with one person. And maybe we can start to get a little civil with each other. Because right now, man, we are walking in little worlds of our own. And that's no way to not only live your own life, but live a life with other people. So come on, folks. Let's have some consideration for the next person. And airlines, can we fix those damn seats so they don't recline as far back anymore? And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 407. I'm Jim Tirano. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.